episode 25 of Consistently Above Average, potentially on the verge of being renamed to Occasionally Above Average, as we took last week off the show, and about 24 hours later than usual on this week's release. What's going wrong, Andrew? You've lost the run of yourself. The semi-notoriety has gone to your head. Well, not quite, but within the next 14 days, I should have all of the equipment needed to do what I would like to be doing. Phase 2.0 with the podcast, if you like. And how to be able to grow it a little bit more. This might even go as far as regular solo video episodes. But if that doesn't happen, it will give us, regardless, the easier ability to record and have guests on. Newer microphones, newer recording equipment. A little deal and an offer came up that was too good to pass. So I've bit the bullet on the equipment and I am looking forward to getting it set up and running and really take the portability element of this podcast into a whole new dimension over the next 2 weeks. Last week, I was going to chat about something that I've shelved for a future episode because I've gotten such a good reaction and feedback from people that I feel like it's something that I want to bring up maybe with a couple of guests in the future. But we are going to go for a split episode instead. At the time of recording, I've pulled an audible, as you might say, about what one of the sides of this podcast was going to be about, because I just want to give a quick appreciation, a quick shout out, recognize post-roll clarity, the post-roll clarity that can wash over you while you're doing jiu-jitsu. This week in particular, my perspective, over the last few months, we've had good weeks, we've had bad weeks. This week has been a great week. I feel I've gotten really, really good training in, really good rounds. Stuff is coming together. Specific stuff having been studied in the previous week or two, come together, working and sparring. And that's all come down to a couple of factors. Number one would be good people showing up for certain training sessions where I'm sparring or looking to train and getting to go with them. And also the ability to set myself a task and stick to the task and work on these things if I'm rolling with a lower belt and I could find maybe the positions easier than rolling with a higher one. That could just be something as simple as with a blue belt, I might find myself in a certain position 4 times in a round instead of 1 time against a brown or a black belt. And that could be something as simple as just like this lovely washed over you feeling of stuff clicking when previously maybe was just falling short. I have changed up something in the training in the sense of saying now that once a month at a specific group of classes for that particular week, either 7 o'clock in the morning, 12 o'clock midday, or the evening classes that I teach, depending on the week of the month that's in it, we are going to forego a regular technique period in the class. We're just going to warm up however you want to warm up, go straight into positional sparring at a slightly lighter intensity, maybe with an easier task or outcome for 2 to 3 sets, and then over an hour of sparring rounds. Now, when this clicks, which is what I've noticed when we did it at the 7 a.m. class a few weeks ago, and now the evening classes, when this clicks correctly with the people who are there to put in the same work as you, you've told them all in advance, this is what we're doing. People are coming in with the intention of knowing that that's what's happening. It's like getting a few extra competition classes a week in because everyone is there knowing what's about to happen. Now, I would just like to say I've officially trademarked post-roll clarity in terms of a nice little play on words and an expression, but I feel it's something that you get after pushing yourself past the point of being uncomfortable or past the point of being tired and finding out that you still have more in the tank than you previously believed. I've seen it happen with other people this week in particular, about going through the motions of harder rounds, and then they're only getting harder as they're getting more tired. And this can also happen if you're getting a really good flow, a very good reactive back and forth with your partner, where both people are going for it. Maybe not stalling or resting in positions or taking as much of a breather as you might on another week. And all I can really feel or verbalize at this moment of this explanation is appreciation. Number on one side, for the people who are coming to do the same as me, the people who are coming to put in the same effort to train and to train with that intention, but also an appreciation for our own bodies, our bodies that we have taught, that have learned to do this robust martial art, to be able to react quick in certain situations, to be able to feel danger coming, to be able to know your setups into your favorite moves and what you're hitting over and over again. Hard competitive sparring training that we're fit and healthy enough to be able to do it. One day in the future, not to sound like an Instagram reel, you'll have your last hard roll with your best training partner. Whether that's in 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the line for whoever's listening to this, one day you will have that last roll and you won't know it's your last one. It's going to just catch you. It's going to be one of your last hard rolls. Your body, as I said, your body, your life, your age, your responsibility, your injuries might catch up with you, and you won't be able to empty the tank as much as you were previously able to. Or maybe your tank will get emptied a lot quicker than what it was previously fit for keeping up with. So as I end this week of training with that thought, I absolutely cannot wait till Monday to get straight back into it. See, can I work on the same stuff over again? See, can I make it better? And likely be sitting here next week saying, last week was great, this week was shite. Here's why it's normal. Here's why it's okay. These things can happen. And you just keep the head down and keep going. On the other side of this week's podcast, it has taken 25 episodes before I actually decide to actively talk about mixed martial arts again. I was commentating at a show last Sunday in Newry. And I wanted to give that a little bit of a light from the element. From the element of, can we trick any of the MMA sphere, Irish-based listening audience, to listen to this podcast? It's not just a jiu-jitsu podcast. We can talk about MMA from time to time. Your fighting championships, ran by long-term tormentor of me when we train, Decky McAleenan. It was the 14th event of the promotion on Sunday. The first event was meant to happen in March of 2020. As far as I can remember, it was the first casualty of public events being cancelled by COVID all the way back then in 2020. The event at the time was going to be a way to get as many people from Team Torres on the card, all training and peaking at the same time, and then being all there as a bigger unit, a bigger team competing maybe like 6, 7, 8 people at once. And we were also going to be treated at the time to the last dance of famous local nutritionist Yannick McGee. And I was only reminded of this recently, that before we started doing morning classes consistently, we were doing unofficial morning classes in Dundalk, where some people were looking to get up to train before work. And Yannick was one of the ones who was getting up to come to Dundalk to train for the fight that he had accepted against the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, and getting up before doing a long day at work, two young kids coming down to Dundalk, and we were just training, me, him, and two others. Unfortunately, with the event being cancelled and postponed and other things going on in life, when the show got back on track to potentially happening, the moment had kind of passed him by. Just missed that chance to grab it, to go out to compete again, to try it one more time. But in one final shout, apart from him completely being the leading figure in Irish mixed martial arts and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu around weigh-ins and proper nutrition and different stuff like that, anyone that has had the misfortune of training with him in the last couple of years knows that he has embraced Jiu-Jitsu as well as Muay Thai. He has won every single tournament that he did domestically as a blue belt before getting his purple belt last year. And a great man and a terror. One of the real reasons that your fighting championships was conceived to begin with as well. So when the first event did finally happen, this was insane. There was no big crowd. There were still COVID restrictions in place in the north, and venues would have no interest in hosting the show. Now, these two shows are available to watch back on YouTube. If you would like to watch them, go on to IURFC, Your Fighting Championships, and go back to Your FC 1 and Your FC 2. Your IUR is Nuri in Irish, by the way. That's why it's called Nuri Fighting Championships. And the first two events were done in a local CrossFit gym that Decky is friendly with the people who own it. And they had a huge floor space and they were willing to allow him to put the show on there. And looking back at some of the footage now before recording this podcast, it's absolutely insane how it was put together with a limited number of tickets being able to be sold for spectators to begin with, and how the walkouts were done and where the lads were training and how that building is actually configured and stuff like that. And it highlights something that, because of the lack of spectators, the majority of viewers that actually watched it and the majority of revenue that came in to do the show were coming in only through live streams. Now, I don't want to jinx it. I could be completely wrong with this, but as far as I was aware, there was not too many events in the country at that time that were focusing on the live stream element of the event as much as this show had to, simply because its first show happened in a COVID area. Now, it had to happen to make sure that as many people could see the event live as it was happening, and when it comes down to stuff like venue capacity and restrictions, but now it's pretty much the norm. Now almost every show in the country has a live stream to go with it. And I do think in large part it was down to the efficiency of the shows. Now, that is Decky being maybe right place, right time, but also to show other promotions and stuff like that, this can be done. Put the money in to do it and do it well, and you can create an alternative revenue stream for your mixed martial arts event. So this is quite in line what we'd been talking about with a grappling show a couple of weeks ago. Like, a fighter from Cork is not going to sell any tickets to fight at an event in Newry. But a fighter from Cork could very easily sell 10 to 15 or more pay-per-view streams to watch an event from the comfort of the person's own home. The fighter still has to go to Newry and all of that sort of stuff. That's fine. But the people watching it can support the promotion financially by buying a ticket. And looking back over the first two events, there are fighters who competed on it who are now established pros or well on their way to becoming that. Conor McCarthy, Kieran Brady, Max Lally all had amateur fights, countless amateur fights on the promotion, who are all now unbeaten professional prospects in mixed martial arts, with countless others having made the transition from amateur to pro over the last couple of years as well that appeared on the show. And these events are very important to me personally, not only for the fact that I'm happy to be seeing Decky doing that sort of stuff and putting shows on after, you know, training for as long as he has, fighting for as long as he has, now transitioning over into coaching and promoting as well, but these local shows, huge effect on me over the course of the last 15 years, coming up on 15 years. The same day that I started Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which was the 24th of July 2010, I also attended my very first live MMA show that evening. I can also remember my parents putting back a family holiday till the 25th of July that year so that I could go to that event because I had been involved with a radio show called Punching and Crunching around mixed martial arts. And that event was on and they had told me we would be covering it. We would be going to it. Now, looking through the card, that event had the likes of Brian Moore, Kieran Davern, Philip Mulpeter, Norman Park, Cathal Pendred, Paddy Houlihan, Liam Shannon, all on the card. It also was the birth of one of the most famous photos within Irish MMA, I would even say to this day, in action combat shot, taken by, I'm going to guess that it was Tommy Lakes, but I could be wrong, and it's a picture of two fighters, Paul Couser and Keith Cody. And I think people will that were around will know what picture I'm talking about. I will try and see if Paul Couser has it up on his Instagram somewhere. It was a lovely left hand against the unsuspecting face, bloodied face of Keith Cody. And the thing, like when I'm talking about the live streams and stuff like that, the thing that is useful to promotions now was not available to promotions then. Myself and Graham from Severe MMA, sometimes me by myself, sometimes the two of us together, we used to film all these events and then upload them onto YouTube. And then we transitioned as well from uploading full fights onto YouTube to also, we were the first people to use fight footage in the interviews and incorporate the two together. So think if I was doing an interview with a random fighter and I knew that we had the footage of him dropping somebody with a body shot, I'd say, how did it feel when you hit the body shot and you saw him going down? Or what sort of weakening of the body happened before you were thrown that you knew that you were going to put him down? Or X, Y, and Z. And whenever I would mention that and we'd get the answer, I would overlay the footage of that part of the fight having happened. And I think it gave a very different and cool dynamic to the actual interview in itself. You were no longer just watching a 5 to 6 minute video of two people standing in the one shot. It was interlinked with footage. One of the most famous examples that worked for us from, you could find it online, I'm sure, was a young lad called Carl McNally at an amateur fight in Clan Wars who hit a rolling thunder, dropped his opponent, and in the process of the rolling thunder strike, transitioned to an armbar. And still to this day, one of the craziest transitions that I've ever seen performed in amateur or professional mixed martial arts. So think of how easy something can go viral now, and go back to 12 years ago. Think of how social media was in its infancy and that still went viral through YouTube and through forums and message boards and stuff like that. Nobody was able to, 10, 12 years ago, no one was able to on their phone go live on Instagram for your fight. No one was able to record something, send it on WhatsApp instantly in great quality. Like, the more that I think back at it, the more I realize that this sport was insanely popular to a degree back then from a live event capacity, at least compared to now. When we're talking about these early Cage Contender shows, Cage Warriors coming back in the last year or two, RDS type things, they are the things that are now, that they have topped that. And the Cage Warriors shows in the Helix and stuff like that, they were well attended. But these early Cage Contender shows were tribal. Like, nearly every fight on these cards were professional rules fights. Now, the standard, not maybe as high all around as it is now because the sport was underdeveloped, but these were just like mad lunatics who were just taking pro fights because they wanted a harder challenge. Not because they were all training like very diligent and whatever professionals, but some of these cards and no expense spared in putting them on. Some of the Cage Contender events in the National Basketball Arena had thousands of people in attendance. And no domestic Irish show, no grassroots Irish show has, or in my opinion, will ever come close to those live event numbers. And they'll never do it. From this point on, they will never do it. And that is not a dig or a slight, but it's also a consequence of the benefit of live streams, of social media, of whatever. There is no longer this, oh, well, I don't have Setanta, so I'm not going to get to see the highlight show in 2 months' time, or this or that. But look at this back and forth that's happening on boards.ie. We'll go and make an evening out of it. We'll go to Dublin and go to the event. The scale and the setup and the production and stuff like this was so insane that the promoter of Cage Contender was a guy called John Ferguson. And he once delayed a public weigh-in between Owen Roddy and Shannon Googerty. Almost certainly it was them two. Delayed the weigh-in because the Enterprise train from Belfast into Dublin Connolly was delayed. The weigh-ins were in Dublin Connolly, outside the bar restaurant in Dublin Connolly, and looking out onto like the foyer before you scan your ticket and go through. Now, he wanted the weigh-ins to go off and to happen at a peak time in the train station where the maximum number of commuters would be coming through the middle of the venue, so they may stop, turn, look at it, probably see the name Cage Contender and think, oh, what's that? I might look that up later. But also from the optics of on the cameras and the videos that the weigh-ins would look better attended and more attended. He stopped the weigh-in from happening for at least 40 minutes or more. These lads dying dehydrated, ready to refuel because the train from Belfast was delayed. And when I look back and I think about it, and I'm laughing to myself now, this man was so far ahead of his time that it was insane. But anybody involved in the sport at the time very likely has say this in quote marks, a John Ferguson story that they could tell you that would not paint the best picture in the world. We have all had them. Just insane. Insane. And as I am going down this little memory lane, I would say on one of the early podcasts, I did try and get people to watch the BG Akumite, the old Lloyd Irvin competition that took place. Well, there's a video that has 73,000 views that I would like you to go and watch this weekend or this week, or if you have the time, rewatch it if you've seen it. Or if you haven't watched it before, then watch it for the first time. You can even freak Graham out a little bit as well. See if he's still getting the notifications. Say you are sent here by consistently above average. Andrew McGahan sent me here to watch this 13 years later, 12 years later. There's a documentary on YouTube around one of the Cage Contender shows. It's called 10,000 Hours. It was produced by Graham from Severe MMA alongside his friends Gavin Fitzgerald and Patrick Timmins Ward. Potentially, and I say this, we'll say it with my chest, three of the most important people in helping the visual growth and awareness of the sport of MMA in Ireland ever. Literally, potentially three of the most important people. You could probably say three of the six most important people in helping mixed martial arts be received by a wider audience and what they were able to do and then move on from that body of work, a self-funded and released documentary, and what then became of that through series and stuff that was picked up by national broadcasters. And I suppose I can't understate it enough that I have such fond memories of going to these events. A friend of mine, now also a black belt, Kieran Maher, he shot my first ever video interviews at these events, one with Owen Roddy, one with Paddy Houlihan as well. I remember very much feeling like a child tipping around these events. In large part, I was one. I was 17 going to these shows and stuff at the time. I can remember one event in particular in the National Basketball Arena that ran late. Now, it ran late because John, the promoter, had either hired a rock band to play at it or agreed to let a rock band play at it during the intermission, which ended up pushing the show to run 20 minutes later, 30 minutes later than usual, because there was a concert on in the middle of the event, which was hilarious. So a fighter on the card, a guy called Will Heffernan, who was involved in a gym here in Ireland at the time, after he had fought and won, and I'd never met or spoke to this man. It was actually Barry Oglesby, because he was commentating on the events at the time. He brokered this lift for me off Will, who was heading that direction. I was stranded. I had gotten the buses out there. There's now no buses happening. I need to get back into the city centre somehow to try find a way back to Dundalk. Will goes out of his way, drops me into town, and I'm thinking, like, I'm going to have to wait it out until the morning to get the first bus back to Dundalk, which is going to be at 6. So I ring my mom and dad. My mom's going mental at this point as well, by the way. Like, didn't want me going to this event without a guaranteed way home to begin with. My dad thought, this is fine. This will be an adventure for him. He's all right up there. He didn't want to get out of bed to come up and collect me. That was the problem. And he was arguing on the other side, saying, by the time that he got out of bed, got up to collect me, and then we got back to Dundalk, the bus would nearly be going anyway. So I'd be fine. Like, nothing was going to happen. You'll be grand. So I wandered around in the middle of the night for an hour. Then I made my way to an Eddie Rockets to write notes and an event report. Jesus, this is a throwback. I bet you this website isn't even active anymore. I was writing an event report for Fight Hounds, fighthounds.ie. And I was sitting in Eddie Rockets over a bowl of chips and a chocolate milkshake for a couple of hours. I then went over to the bus Oris station, and I begged the bus driver, who was heading to Belfast, it was the 1X or the X1 bus. I said, I'm 17 and I'm stranded here. Can you please pull in at the side of the motorway at Dundalk? I know you're meant to be going to Belfast, but just please pull in at the motorway and I'll get myself home from there. Just let me off closer to my house, please. And got chatting to the driver. Don't know if this is still the case or not, but there was only 4 people on the bus. This is at like 3:30, 4:30 in the morning. 4 people on the bus to Belfast. It wasn't going to stop until Newry. He said, they're not going to notice and they're not going to care. He drove in, dropped me into Dundalk, into the centre of Dundalk, and then went on his way to the motorway. Definitely was not meant to do that. Definitely was not allowed to do that. My mom went mad the next day. My dad thought, look, he's relatively self-reliant. That's a good story. He made it home. He's fine. And that was one of many insane experiences through covering the events when I was younger. So fast forward to today, commentating on these events, commentating and being involved with this particular promotion, Your Fighting Championship, is very important to me even now, even if I'm not as involved in the world of mixed martial arts as I once was, because they are so important for the future. A grassroots scene and development is essential for anyone who's going to go anywhere in the future of this sport. One of the things that kind of caught me for a while with these local shows and domestic shows, and something that I have become a little bit more worried with the development of social media, is, first of all, it's a lot easier for these things to be promoted. But in the same side of things, it's a lot easier for, like, there is no right or wrong way to run an event, by the way. And there's no right or wrong way to cover an event, to produce content for an event. And I think everything has a place in the ecosystem. And right or wrongly, people will seek out the best stuff or the gold standard stuff. And if people want to be respected and to be considered the gold standard, they have to do a serious amount of work to get themselves, consistent work, to get themselves to that area and that position. And I feel like maybe I just felt I was wrong place, wrong time in terms of an era and in terms of technology and social media and whatever, because I have spent far too many evenings pulled in on the side of the road at a petrol station, driving back from different events in the middle of the night, editing on a laptop, sitting in the Volkswagen Polo, sitting in the Daewoo Matiz, sitting in the Toyota Starlet, any of the little shit boxes that I had growing up, transferring camera footage to transfer audio footage to match them up together and export them so I would have them as quickly as possible. Now, an iPhone can do even better. Do you know what I mean? That's the thing that was like, I want everyone to know the hardship of editing videos on the side of a road outside an apple green at one point in their life. And even now, as handy as it is, like I said, with the streams, you don't even have to waste your petrol. You don't even have to go to these events. You can just watch it the next day, and then there's five people that are really good knockouts. Let's get them on FaceTime. And like, these things are important. So these promotions and podcasts, interviews, whatever, that's all important in terms of now more potential visibility and stuff like that and helping fighters. But I just think that it is important that there are processes from when I was younger that made me so fond of this side of the sport. The going to the events, the getting home late, the driving the length and breadth of the country to be able to go and watch live sport and seeing people commit and give a lot for themselves and to put themselves in bad situations and to train hard and to come up short and to be devastated or to be elated. Like, you develop a little bit more empathy for what they're doing when you're there and you're kind of seeing it up front and personal. Now, the other side of it is little to no money to be made from this. So the reality is, like, if I can just stay at home and watch it and build a brand and build a podcast and build a whatever, then that's the thing to do, because you're not going to be out money in the longer term by going to these events. And I can't state this enough, that the way you do it, or the way that people are doing it, that's the most efficient way for them to be doing it. And the most important thing is that somebody is doing it, not that they're doing it this way or doing it that way or X, Y, and Z. And to start rounding out this week's podcast with a story that came up at Motherfuckers this week, eating a sausage and bacon bap. I spoke a few weeks ago about the Bob Dylan movie, how great it was. Well, Eamon from Motherfuckers, big Bob Dylan fan, so we would chat about him quite a bit. But the first time that I became consciously aware of a Bob Dylan track that wasn't like a Rolling Stone or something like that was coming back from an MMA show. Now, I had driven down to Cork that day and I was given a lift back to somebody. Now, I don't know if I had collected him earlier on in the day or not, but he was someone working at the event and knew I was driving back and asked me could I drop him to somewhere in South Dublin. Now, when you're thinking Cork to Louth, Cork to Dundalk, you're thinking, yeah, I can throw someone into Dublin, that's no problem, sure, I'm going to be passing Dublin. But you're not really ever going into Dublin. You're M50ing the way in the middle of the night and making speed. And any detour you realise after the fact is actually a lot longer than you would think. So he did live somewhere close to UCD, and I was not really used to that drive at the time. This is 2013 or something like that. It was 2013 exactly, actually, because as I'm coming back from dropping him home, I'm also involved with a radio station called 8radio.com. Throughout the year, they'll do regular runs on FM, and this was during a FM run that was happening. So I was actually able to listen on the FM in my car. I had it in Cork, I lost it then on the way, and then I got it back in Dublin. And we are now talking at 1:30. 1:30 on a Saturday morning. Steve Conway was the name of the presenter on air at the time, and he is a big history in different radio stations and a story within the radio world. And he was explaining how he had worked on many other stations, but none that allowed him to play the full version of this next song, because 8 Radio is all about playing the music we like. Regardless of the duration or the genre or whatever it is, if the presenter likes it, there's a very good chance that you're going to hear it. And I can remember being completely like enthralled into hearing this call to action for the station by Steve. And then he started to play Bob Dylan's Hurricane, all 8 and whatever minutes of Bob Dylan's Hurricane. And here I am, completely engrossed in the lyrics, bombing it down the little Toyota Starlet, down the Stillorgan Dual carriageway, making very good time to get in towards the city centre, and then back onto Dundalk. And those sort of fond memories of not only the actual event in itself, but the laboursome journeys that I know are shared even now by the medics that cover the events. My good friend Paul Brown has racked up more kilometres than I would say anybody in the country the last couple of years, as being commentating on events and emceeing events. His car is probably rallied with the amount of kilometres that he has done going to these events. I'm sure referees, judges, medics, commentators, whatever, have all had very late finishes and late drives home, whether you're coming from Cork or coming from Derry or coming from anything like that. And in speaking of Browner, you can catch the lads as well through Severe MMA, probably for a bout-by-bout review of the Euro card in particular on the L Triangle and Severe MMA. But I do believe that from that card last Saturday, there are amateurs who could go on to have great professional careers. But I also feel that in one way or another, and I felt this way for a while about the local domestic scene, that there are a lot of people who are being, for a better phrase or better turn of phrase, being led down the garden path in the world of mixed martial arts, either by the internet or their own dreams or their own beliefs or their coaches or their teammates or whatever they think that they're going to get from being involved with the sport. Now, to give a quick shout, these particular amateurs, Sam Lynch, Saeed Sharamkil, Rian Dunleavy and Jake Nye, I think all of the potential to give us good storylines, good entertainment, good whatever their involvement in the sport will be, whatever their limit is, who knows with that. But moving forward in the sport, there are people that I will be keeping an eye out for, in the sense of, you know, some of these people could just be doing it for their own journey to find out about something within themselves or to fight against something going on within themselves. Others could be dreaming of world titles and being in the UFC, and some others won't progress past amateur at all. And that's fine. You know, some people don't have to do that. But they all fought quite well, had either overcame adversity, good style, good focus, good whatever, outside of the usual names that you would maybe pick from the card. Really like the look of what could happen for those four. But as I'm thinking about that and saying that about, like, maybe it won't go past amateur, maybe they'll just leave it at that, I have been drawn back to something that John Kavanagh said on the MMA Hour a couple of years ago with Errol Helwani. And when I'm looking at how the internet is going, as I've said this, in terms of easily availability of stuff, of social media, of promoting yourself, how the internet is going, maybe creating, this could also apply to me as well, an inflated sense of importance of your opinion, of your worth, of your position, of you as a person and stuff like that. I can feel that that is creeping into the sport regarding the participation of the sport, even at an amateur level, definitely at a professional level. And this is, I'm paraphrasing to a degree, but this is the veteran's opinion. This is the man who's been there at the highest events, the biggest occasions. He's bought the t-shirt. He has literally written the book. Win or Learn, still available as far as I'm aware. But potentially John Kavanagh in this interview offered really good advice to whoever's ears that it might fall on in the future. As he has grown older, had kids, built a family, other responsibilities, employing staff, keeping a gym going, whatever. The fights and the routine of having such a big team all start to mold and blend into one. You could be on top of the earth on Saturday night in some far-flung part of the world, but on Monday morning, you're back in the gym because you've a new set of eyes that are looking for your attention, because the following week, they're going to be doing the same thing and they're going to be competing. And he said something along the lines of, he won't celebrate too much if you win, and he won't commiserate too much if you lose. This is sport. The sun is still going to rise the next morning, regardless of the result and the outcome of your fight, no matter how it might feel in that moment. That for you personally, as the individual, as the fighter, it's the single most important thing in your life at that moment. And he said that is a very up and down thing, where it just goes all into one. Takes a lot out of the person as the coach, as the person who's putting it all together. But also that to him as a coach, the amateur route is now looking a lot more appealing to him. With the development of the IMAF system and whatever, International Mixed Martial Arts Federation, you can be selected. And I've gone 41 minutes without throwing any shade on this podcast, so I would just like to say you can be selected for the national team, but that should have a huge asterisk next to it, considering those insane controversy in the last couple of years with a particular amateur flyweight in the flyweight division about essentially Shay Cleland. Come on, Shay, should have been representing Team Ireland, was not allowed to represent Team Ireland in the end because they were like, oh, well, we let that fight happen, but it shouldn't have really happened because the day before, you know, he lost and then, or just whatever, right? That's still a sore point. That is still a sore point here from this presenter's perspective. However, in theory, the system is set up in a way that you will fight to win the trial. You will be chosen to represent your country. If you are selected through sponsorship that you can raise yourself or the cost that you'll pay yourself, you will pay the cost to compete at either the European or the World Amateur MMA Championships. You can train, you can fight, you can represent your country, hopefully become a champion. Then, and this is, I'm paraphrasing again with what John had said in those interviews, you can leave that part of your life behind, close the chapter on mixed martial arts and go about your business with the rest of your life. It's clean, there's less damage, it's set up in an almost perfectly professional way in terms of the events. You test yourself in that avenue, you compete against the best people in your country to get there, and then you compete against the best in Europe and the best in the world. And then you get on with your life. And then you do something else. And then you don't worry about taking damage. And then you don't worry about trying to become a professional. And you don't worry about putting all your eggs in the basket about feeling that you're going to become financially and independently secure through one of the most brutal and unforgiving sports in the world. There are far more versions of the story of people who are now suffering difficulties later in life having pursued professional mixed martial arts than there are people who are retired and financially set for life based off those decisions to pursue it. There are the first, second, third generation of fighters, the huge UFC antitrust lawsuit that has happened where people are happy to have gotten this sort of injection of money into their life post-retirement, and they need it to help to be able to deal with some of the medical issues and complications that have arisen from not knowing the dangers and training in certain ways and not listening to the right advice at different points in their life. There have been plenty of people with side jobs who protected themselves for when they stopped competing professionally, or they transitioned into coaching, or they were backed by something else, or they had the safety blanket, or they had the net. And I would say this to almost everybody, to almost any young fighter who is going to go and try and make this a career, that they need a backup, that they need something to fall back on, whether that's finishing college, finding something that they're passionate at, doing a side hustle, whatever. The only way that this doesn't need to happen is if you have been ingrained in this attitude and you have support from within your family and social circle and whatever for you to pursue this, not only from a young age, but as you're going through that gap of 15, 16, 17, 18 years old, you're able to avoid the social pull and seemingly the thing that will pull people towards drink and drugs and not buckle to peer pressure. Because if you're going to make a run at it and you're going to rely on nothing else, you cannot afford to be pissing away your late teens. You cannot afford to be pissing away your early 20s. It will not work for you in the longer term if you're doing that. It just simply will not. Now, to finish on that, with time, this is what I've garnered from speaking to other people. And whether this is a widely felt thing or not, I'm not sure. But with time comes the realization that when you're in this coaching perspective, when you are the coach, when you're the center point of so many people's lives of, well, what's next for me? When am I going to get to fight again? When am I out again? Okay, what am I going to do this weekend? When it comes to the realization that you are away almost every weekend or every couple of weeks, putting your own life on hold, putting the time and effort into your fighters or your fight team and whatever, more often than not, these individuals are putting a fraction of what they could or a fraction of what they should be putting into something as dangerous as mixed martial arts. That maybe it starts to make you realize that that's why I'm not going to be too high if you win, and that's why I'm not going to be too low if you lose. Because they may start to think, is what I'm given to this at the detriment of my responsibilities outside of this, like being away and different stuff like that? Is the juice worth the squeeze in that sense? If you're going to ask, and I say this more so to the fighter perspective here, that's who I'm saying it to. If you're going to ask somebody to be there for you, when it's done, when it's all said and done, you better be able to look back with a clean conscience and a clean heart and realize that when you had the opportunity in the peak of your physical career, that you left no stone unturned. I know of plenty of former pro fighters who have such high standards in terms of being involved with MMA teams now, or high standards in regarding to what they would expect from someone, and others in particular who only involve their time, expertise, and knowledge with one or two select individuals, because they would, by and large, fall out with anybody else that they came in contact with who wasn't prepared to do the work that was required. And thanks to the modern age of social media, thanks to the internet, thanks to all of this, these people are just doing it to be seen to be doing it, not because they actually have that thing inside them that's going to get them up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go and run, that's going to put them in the gym for 9 o'clock in the morning to do solo drills, to be there early before their group class at 11 o'clock, that will stay longer after the next class to be able to get that little bit of extra work, that will sleep and rest in their car or in the gym if they're allowed to throughout the course of the day before they dust themselves back off, wake themselves up, wipe the sleep out of their eye, and train again for 2 or 3 hours that evening. There are fuck all people willing to do that at the minute, from what I have been told. And there are that fraction of people that are willing to do it. And I can guarantee you, in 3, 4, 5, 6, whatever year's time, when those individuals get what they deserve, when they are in the UFC, when they are making money, when they're cracking the top 10 of certain divisions, when they're in not one fighting championship, that'll be defunct by then, when they're in Ryzen or PFL or whatever has popped up between now and then, and you'll have the typical begrudgery of people at home being like, yeah, well, he was an arsehole. See the way he goes on. I can't stand him. These people are not aware of what actually went down the 5, 6, 7, 8 years previously to help get them to that position. And if you're the person who's willing to do that, then your coach will stand by and say, absolutely, it was tough, but the juice was worth the squeeze. What a ramble. What a waffler. Who even knows if he made any sense? We're tired. It's after midnight. I have to go to Grappling Industries tomorrow. Ugh. Yuck. I'll be back next week talking about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu only. Enjoy the rest of your week. Thanks for the long episode. Goodbye.